Whakalofolaia tu, you're listening to Dateline Pacific from RNZ Pacific, ko Koroi Hawkins e hingo haku. Coming up.
He spent about 9 years in prison without his court case being heard.
Papua New Guinea's corrections are working to prevent deadly prison breaks. Also,
I think it's borderline intimidation to anyone who wants to celebrate with the Taiwanese.
Marshall Islands slams China for altercation at Taiwan National Day event in Fiji. And latrines and running water installed to improve sanitation in Bougainville communities. Papua New Guinea's correctional services are planning new measures to prevent jail breaks. This follows an investigation into a mass prison escape from Leh's Buimo jail in August when 11 inmates were shot dead and 35 others broke out. Prison escapes are common in PNG and there have been a few deadly ones this year. I spoke with Johnny Blades, who has been following events.
So the investigation into the big jailbreak at Buimo in August found that there was inadequate correctional service staffing and inadequate security fencing around the facility. They were part of the mix, but also just more general constraints of a correction system, which is evidently not enough really to maintain the adequate manpower or have strong physical containment at prisons.
What about the 11 people who were shot dead in the jailbreak in August? Is there any resulting charges?
No charges. I mean, ultimately 11 people died. And, you know, inmates or not, that's 11 lives and a lot of family members who will be messed up because of that. So no charges, no criminal cases stemming from that as yet. But I understand that's generally the case. If a prison escape happens and people die in PNG, that seems to be par for the course. Now, I caught up with the Correctional Services Commissioner, Stephen Pokanis, just in the last day or so, and, you know, he had overseen this investigation into the big prison escape at Buimo. He wasn't shirking blame on behalf of the Correctional Services Commission. He has identified key problems that they have, like the manpower, as I said, and prisons like Buimo are all overcrowded. You know, for instance, he said Buimo has a population of around 1,000 inmates, which he said was double what the facility is equipped to handle. And here's what the commissioner had to say about the inmate to correction staff ratio at that prison.
We have about 85 officers who are stationed at Buimo. We have roughly about 12 officers who cover the entire prison. Inside the dormitories where prisoners live, we have probably about 6 to contain around 1,000 prisoners inside. So I think it's to do with the fear of being attacked or being killed by prisoners.
Surely there's some pressure on government to do more because mass jailbreaks are clearly happening each year in Papua New Guinea.
By my latest count this year, so far there's been at least 19 inmates who have been killed trying to escape from Papua New Guinea prisons in three separate mass jailbreaks. There was the Buimo one we've been talking about in August. Back in February in Western Highlands, Baizu prison in Western Highlands, six escapees were shot dead fleeing that prison. And again at Buimo back in January, two people shot dead, one prisoner trying to escape, and a warder as well. And of course there's been people injured in these outbreaks which happen each year. One of the big drivers is the backlog of court cases. People are on remand, they haven't been convicted, and they're waiting for their case to go to trial, but they're in there with the other prison population, and there's many of them.
With Buimo, we had one who was held in custody for 9 years, the one that amongst the group that escaped this year. He spent about 9 years in prison without his case being heard.
So 9 years on remand waiting for your court case, for whatever charge, it might even be less than that if you were convicted.
Yeah, so no wonder, you know, frustrations build up, especially because of the condition of the prisons. A lot of them are disease-ridden and it's overcrowded. So, yeah, it's not surprising some should look to break out of jail. The justice system's just so inefficient in committing cases to trial. There are obviously problems with the prosecution. Cases are always being delayed. So these are the problems that lead to such escapes at places like Buimo, which also, obviously, at the same time, need better fencing. And according to Pokanis, they've asked the government for something like 2.3 million kina to build an adequate fencing and electronic surveillance system around Buimo. That's something, he says, they're looking at and planning for. But they are now instructing the officers in the prisons not to shoot prisoners anymore. He says options other than extreme use of force now have to be explored properly.
We have issued instructions to stop shooting prisoners. And also we are looking at options in firearm, maybe non-lethal weapons that we have explored. And for the correctional service officers, I'm working with the United Nations. We have developed a training on human rights.
What's the public attitude towards prisoners in Papua New Guinea? Is there much empathy for their plight?
Well, not evidently, to be honest with you. That would be the same with many of our countries. The populace often looks down on prisoners as people who get what they deserve. But these people escaping from prison are often remandees. They're yet to be, you know, found guilty of a crime. So it's a human rights violation, really. He is also recognising that their staff are under pressure. They're poorly resourced, outnumbered. They need to reorganise their manpower, he says, in a way that's putting them where they're needed most, but doing it in a way that avoids burnout and stress, which is obviously a factor in the corrections system.
That was Johnny Blades reporting. The Marshall Islands has condemned what it calls ongoing bullying and intimidation tactics by China in the Pacific region. This comes after a Taiwanese diplomat was hospitalized following an alleged stoush with Chinese government officials at an event in Suva earlier this month. The Marshall Islands is one of four Pacific Island countries with diplomatic links to Taiwan. Its ambassador to Fiji attended the Taiwan National Day event but says he did not witness the incident. Alborn Ishoda tells Christine Ravoy he's disappointed at China's presence at the event and their claims their officials were provoked.
This is not a first time Chinese officials standing outside the venue. I gather collecting information on whoever is going inside the venue. But this is the first time that a physical altercation actually took part.
You're saying that this is not the first time you've experienced something like this. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
No, this is not the first time that we've seen Chinese officials standing right outside the hotel venue where these national days that Taiwan host. I don't see them being physical, but we noticed them standing around and I assume collecting information on whoever is attending the national days.
And do you think that's very diplomatic of them to do that?
I think it's quite the opposite. I think it's borderline intimidation to anyone who wants to celebrate with the Taiwanese. I just find it a bit nuisance. I basically don't give them much thought because I don't really have an issue whether they're there or not. But obviously, their being there sends some signals to whoever is attending that may care about how they view that.
Marshall Islands are one of the few countries in the Pacific that recognize Taiwan. What does this say to you?
It's a bit concerning because not only do we recognize Taiwan as an independent state, but also a member of the Human Rights Council. You know, we want to see, you know, democracies and countries practicing their rights to exist. And as a country that recognized Taiwan, it's a bit concerning that these incidences have been elevated to actual physical altercation. Our view is that it really overshadows the role that both countries play in the region. The Republic of China trade mission in Fiji has regional relevance. And should for a country that recognizes Taiwan, we value that their presence here and the partnership that we're able to achieve from our ongoing bilateral discussion with their mission here, trade mission here in Suva.
Mm. And what has the relationship been with Taiwan?
Oh, it's been fantastic. Taiwan, like the Marshall Islands, values the democracy and the process within the pillars of democracy. So, you know, we've enjoyed a very good relationship with Taipei and Taiwan.
Is the Marshall Islands taking any action against sending any message to the Chinese mission?
We couldn't, even if we wanted to, because there is no recognized relationship between the two countries right now. But we do speak out. I put out a very strong tweet about my views of the incident. When the statement came out that stated that the Chinese were provoked by the color or the flag of the Taiwan, which they viewed as illegal, well, they weren't invited to be there in the first place. That's my view.
What does the Marshall Islands want to see out of all of this?
We want to see peaceful dialogues happen between countries. Whether we agree to issues or not, we want to see peaceful dialogues continuing to take place, whether they take place in Beijing, Taipei, or elsewhere. But we encourage that at the highest level possible. Mm-hmm. And we cannot force it, but we will continue to encourage it. We hope that this is the last of this this type of incidents to happen. We will look forward to next year's celebration of Taiwan's National Day in a more peaceful manner.
Alban Ishoda, Marshall Islands Ambassador to Fiji. Dozens of central Bougainville communities have access to running water and latrine facilities for the first time. The WASH Water Sanitation and Hygiene Project has been undertaken by World Vision, aided by the European Union, UNICEF and the Bougainville government. World Vision's country manager in Papua New Guinea, Heather McLeod, told Don Wiseman more about what the NGO has been doing.
The project was focused on making sure that all the schools and all the health facilities actually have access to running water. Up till now, they haven't had any, many of them haven't had any water facilities, nor toilets. So what we've been doing is working with the different schools, the different health facilities to put those in place so that people can use the toilets and that they and children at school can use the toilets and then wash their hands as well. So that's one part of the project. The other part is really looking at community-led total sanitation, which is around getting communities to learn to the importance of not just what we call defecating in open spaces, but actually using, again, using latrines or toilets. We know that people don't necessarily use toilets because they've been using just whatever patches of land they usually use. So what we've been doing is a lot of conversations about what's the purpose of having a latrine, how do you build a latrine. So we've been encouraging communities to build their own latrines and for each household and putting in what we call tippy tap, which is just a very simple way of having water and being able to wash your hands right next door to a latrine. So every household is encouraged to have their own latrine. And then we have officials come in and they call it ODF, Open Defecation Free Community. The aim of all of this is to make sure that you reduce disease and keep people healthier. And of course, with COVID and the risks of COVID, having hand washing facilities available is absolutely critical. So it was designed before COVID, but it's had an added factor of being able to respond to some of the COVID prevention that's really important.
And what sort of a take up have you had? Because it's something that to a large extent requires a major cultural change, doesn't it?
Yeah, it seems to have been successful. What we've found is at the moment we have a number of open defecation-free communities. So what happens is they have to come and verify that people are actually using their latrines. It's quite a long process for that. So we think we're up to about halfway through in terms of those, or a third of the way through in terms of getting those communities being able to be using their latrines and hand washing.
People are buying into it.
Yeah, they are. I think they're realising that it is actually a better way to go. And any change, some are reluctant, but the other thing we're doing it, because we're doing it in the same communities where school children are, school children will be forming hygiene clubs and health clubs at the school. And what they do is they really help drive it as well. And so they go home and promote it in their communities as well, and you have volunteers in the community who are also promoting it. So it's to get it owned by the community, and then from a sustainability point of view, we're forming a WASH committee in some of these areas as well, so that they follow up. A WASH is water and sanitation and hygiene promotion, and so they're following up as well. So what we have found in other countries as well is that if you follow up and follow this process, the communities in general will own it in the long term. So this isn't a project that you just put in and then people stop using it.
World Vision's country manager in Papua New Guinea, Heather McLeod. And that's Dateline from RNZ Pacific. There's more on our website. Just head to rnzi.com and you can also listen to this as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Tofa.